Yes.
Yes.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Vais acabando, por favor. Prentza aurrekoari hasiera emango.
Please, could the photographers finish their work? Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. And welcome. Good morning and welcome to the press conference, which corresponds to the North American production called American Pastoral, which is projected in the official section of the film festival. American Pastoral is the debut of Ewan McGregor as a director, who is with us today. And also, he's in the film as well, along with Jennifer Connelly, who's here at the press conference, along with two of the producers of the film, Eric Reid and Gary Lucchesi. Okay, so let's start. You can start with the first question.
Good morning, everybody. Good morning.
Thanks for having us in San Sebastian Film Festival. We're all very pleased to be here. It's great to be back.
Welcome back.
Thank you.
Good morning.
T-shirt.
Yes,
danger, danger.
May the force be with you.
No. First question.
No, it wasn't the question.
Really,
the
seriously.
Question is about the movie. Okay. I wanted to know, as director, you have many work with many directors in all your career. I would like to know what kind of director would you like to be, and if Bayona always shooting between a relationship between moms and daughter, if you're gonna do it between the relationship between dad, between fathers and sons. And congratulations, because it's a really good movie.
Thank you. Well, I was influenced by all the directors I've worked with. I've been lucky to work with an enormous amount of really talented directors, many of whom I've learned an awful lot from. Some I've learned what not to do from. I suppose that's true to say. And the thing about directing is, it seems to me, is that there's no correct way. There's no one way to direct that feels right. Like, I've enjoyed working with many, many directors. If I choose some examples, for instance, like Danny Boyle and Woody Allen, or Roman Polanski. There's three directors I really enjoyed working with, and all three of them work in an entirely different way. So there's no correct way. It seems to me that directing is very much just about character and who you are and where you put the importance. And I'm an actor, so I direct from an actor's point of view, I suppose. I wanted to shoot the film so that acting could tell the story, as opposed to making, you know, I didn't make the film I didn't tell the story technically with crazy camera moves, and I wanted the actors to be allowed to do that. So I was influenced by all of them, is the question. And then in terms of the father-daughter story, yes, I'm a father of four girls. I absolutely know what that relationship is, can be, and why I was so attracted to this script, I think, because I thought it was very beautifully observed in the writing, and indeed in Philip Roth's novel, beautifully observed. The parenting that he writes about is really incredibly interesting, considering he has no children, Philip. Yeah, so it's very interesting. And I would, if I made a film about fathers and sons, of course, I would be doing it only from the perspective of the son, because I don't know what it's like to father a boy. Thank you.
Hi, good morning, congratulations. Hi, good morning. A question for you and for Jennifer. Why did you decide to adapt Philip Roth? How was the adaptation? And to Jennifer Connelly, as regards to your character, how do you value, or did you take that character, that mother who denies her daughter? It's very difficult to see a mother who denies almost the existence of a daughter because she just really sort of leaves it on one side.
I think she has a long and very painful journey with her daughter. I think that Dawn is someone who is searching for something authentic and something good, and I think that Mary really represents that in her life. And I think that she has a very powerful and pure love for her daughter. And I think that, you know, when Mary becomes a teenager, she rejects Dawn. And I think that rejection is so devastating to her. And when Mary literally and figuratively blows their lives apart, I think Dawn is completely dismantled by it and feels it so deeply and is so bereft that she doesn't know how to survive with it. She doesn't know how to accept it and really feel it and continue in the way that she was. So I think she makes this sort of tragic choice, which is the only way she can think of to really move forward and continue living, which is to revert to a sort of a different version of herself, a kind of a version that, frankly, I don't think she ever wanted to be. I think that it's the only way that she can really carry on. I don't think it's an example of a lack of love. I think it more demonstrates how much her daughter had meant to her that she can't really live in the same way without her.
Perdón. Les ruego que respeten los turnos de pregunta.
Please respect people's... Hi, good morning. What a surprise that you've debuted with such an American film and choosing excellent actresses as well in the film. Ewan McGregor, I'd like to ask you, when did you feel the need of duplicating yourself as a director and actor at the same time? That is to say, when did you feel the need to do that, to be the actor and director? And whether... is there a similar case... Patricia Hearst, does that come to mind? It's a similar case. It was the daughter of a millionaire who disappeared for quite a long time as well. Is there any similar case close to you that takes place, similar to what takes place in the film? And she's reminded of Patricia Hearst. I don't know whether that rings a bell.
Well, I was attached to the script to play the Swede long before I was to direct the film. So I didn't feel like uncasting myself when I took over as a director, because one of the really driving forces for me to direct the film was that I didn't want it to not happen. I wanted this film to be made because for 3 years or more I'd been dreaming of playing the Swede with Jennifer and Dakota, and when it felt like that might not happen, I didn't want to let it go. Some projects come and go, and as an actor, you know, I've been involved in projects that haven't been made. And you let them go. It's just part of the run of things. But this one, I just didn't want to. So when I became the director, I'd been living with the idea of me playing the Swede, so I just carried on with that. And it seemed like a very nice place to direct from. I found it not to be confusing to be directing and acting at the same time. It didn't feel to me like two separate jobs, but just one, the same job. It was just became one thing, and a wonderful thing too. So, and the second part of Hearst, I don't know. I'm not familiar with that story, and I don't know of anybody who's. Oh, well, it's not true. I mean, I was going to say I don't know of anybody who's lost a daughter, but what I think. Of course, this is a story of a very extreme losing of your child. The Swede and Dawn, they lose their daughter to radicalism and terrorism, and she is lost to them. But, you know, I have daughters, and my eldest one has gone to college. She's 20 years old. She's in her third year in New York. And we live on the other coast of America. So in a small way, you know, there's a loss of your children. And I've felt very... perhaps why I was so attracted to this role, is that there's he could be writing about that, Roth, you know. It could be just about the way our children grow up and went through their teenage years. They sort of push against you, and you hope very much that they come back to you when they're a bit older, you know. So I've experienced that sort of loss, I suppose.
Hi, a couple of questions. What was your relationship with Philip Roth? Your relationship with Philip Roth, whether Philip Roth has seen the film, I'd like to know that. And then you're talking about your daughter now, because this film happens, just like in the novel, in a specific period of time in the United States. You related that to the present day with the parents and children, or relationship, even though it's extreme, but what other relationships with the social and political side in the United States or Europe? Do you think this novel is related in any way to the United States or things that have happened in the U.S. and things that may have happened in Europe, in continental Europe?
Was that for me?
Yeah.
Yes. What was the first part? The first part of your question was
Philip Roth.
Yes. Philip Roth has seen the film, and I never met Philip Roth. I still have never met Philip Roth. He gave his blessing to the script many, many years ago. I believe in the...
Yes, he gave his blessing a long time ago, 10 years ago, to the script.
And the draft of the film that I directed was a slightly reduced version of that draft. There was a couple of larger set pieces that I didn't feel were necessary. They were sort of going to be expensive things to shoot and weren't necessary for the story. So basically, the draft that I shot, Philip Roth had given his blessing to. And then we made the film. I never met Philip. But I lived in his book from when I was given the job to direct the film in late 2014 to when we started shooting the film in September 2015. I lived in his novel. I was so familiar with the film script, and I then started imbibing his novel. And so I read it all on a daily basis. There's a really fine recording of it by the actor Ron Silver, and I would play that whenever I was driving or running or whatever I was doing. I'd have Ron reading it to me. And so I sort of, for nine months, lived inside Philip's novel. And not because I was looking for scenes that we didn't have in our adaptation, but that I wanted to feel that I was going to make his novel. I wanted for it to feel like it had the flavor of Philip Roth in it. And I feel like I managed to pull that off. And 2 weeks ago, we got a lovely message from Philip Roth to say that with his notes about the film, and he was very complimentary about it, and he liked it. And so I was very happy about that. I realized how much it meant to me when I discovered that he did like it and approved of the movie. I realized that at that moment how much it had meant to me that he would, you know. If he hadn't, I think I would have felt a sense of failure in a way. And the second part about politics, well, it's very much about America, of course. It's about America and about post-war American hope and the effect on that with the 60s and with Vietnam. And he was writing about that period of American history, and I feel like he writes about a family that embody those things, and the Swede and Don embody American, you know, post-war dream, and Mary embodies the radical 60s left-wing anti-war movement, and the sort of collision of those two worlds. And so our family represent that in a way, and during the edit we managed to keep that feeling of America, because I always wanted it to be a story about this family, but I wanted it also to be the story of America. So we managed to achieve that using some stock footage, little short montages of footage of things that happened in the time, the Vietnam War, the riots in Newark in 67, just to elevate the film to be about America as well, I think.
Buenos dias.
Hi, good morning. Question for both of you. After seeing the film, I consider the best thing are Dakota's and Jennifer's portrayal of their characters. I'd like to ask you, Jennifer, whether Did it help you that Ewan is an actor before a director? Did it help you to portray your role better? And I'd like to ask both of you whether you've seen Julieta by Pedro Almodovar, because I think Saving the Differences in the context, both films address the same trauma, how a father or a mother, in this case, suffers the loss of a daughter and that doesn't allow her to advance and progress in life. Whether you've seen the film or do you understand those similarities? And as parents in real life, do you consider that would have affected you or in the same way, or on the contrary, you would have been able to continue with your life and not suffer that loss?
I have not seen that film. That sounds interesting. I'd like to see it. I have not seen Julieta. Ewan was great to work with as a director, especially as an actor. It was wonderful to have that space. I feel like oftentimes you show up on a movie set and it's kind of about making choices and getting rid of options and sort of narrowing, sort of closing down on something. And it was great to come to work every morning and open things up for discussion. You know, even before we started shooting, we had rehearsals where we would discuss everything, discuss all the scenes and in a sort of more theoretical way. And then every day on set, we would have completely private rehearsals where sometimes it was just the two of us in the room with no one there. We could try the scene in different ways with different blocking and sort of push it in different directions before we started narrowing down. And that was wonderful to have that kind of freedom to explore and ask questions. I found the novel really helpful in preparation. It was like having a really exquisitely written journal for my character, and I referred to it often. And I had a lot of, I really was intrigued by Dawn and was really excited to play her as a character. I thought she was strong but brittle and beautiful in her complexity, and I had a lot of compassion for her and her struggle. As a mother, I can't imagine experiencing that kind of loss. I cherish my time with my kids. I have three kids, and I can't imagine enduring the loss of a child. So.
I also have not seen that film. Is it here at this festival? No.
No. It's been released in
Spain. Oh, it's been released. Oh. Well, I'd like to watch it. I love his movies. But I have not seen that one, no. I'm just thinking about other films about that. The only film that springs to mind is Nanni Moretti's movie, In the Sun's Room. Do you remember that film? It was like, it's so beautiful, that movie. Oh, my God. But that was a long time ago, and I hadn't thought about it until now. But that also deals with the loss of a son in that case. Was there another part of the question that I've forgotten? No, let someone else ask a question. That was good.
Next question, please. Siguiente pregunta.
Next question. Hi, Mr. McGregor. Ewan, do you believe that the posters that promote your films reflect in a clear and intimate way the meaning of the film? That is to say, in other words, do you believe that you could criticize... Do you think we could critique the film by just looking at the film poster? That is to say, do you think it fits in with what the film's trying to tell?
Do I like the poster? Is that your question, really?
Poster.
That's where we go.
I like the poster, yeah. I think the poster's really, really... Why am I listening to that? I'm like, just listening to my own voice. No, I like the poster, yes. It was, we came up with... I don't know, maybe 8 or 9 poster ideas before we shot the film, when we went to Cannes over a year ago to pitch the film to international distributors. And I spoke for the first time about what I was imagining for the movie. And so we made some poster ideas for that, and that was one of them. And I've never got past it. I thought it was a beautiful representation of what I think the film's about, yeah. I like it. I think it's really, as an actor, I find it very disappointing often, movie posters. They're often misleading or cheesy. I've had to do so many photo shoots for them that I like, you know, we do the back-to-back romantic comedy poster shoot that we've all had to suffer.
Yeah.
And in this case, I thought, here's a classy poster, you know, I really like it. I hope you do too. I'm sorry if you don't. Okay.
Siguiente pregunta.
Next question, please.
In the film, it's over here. I just wondered, talking about directors and Danny Boyle, you've just finished filming Trainspotting 2, I believe. What was it like going back to the streets of Edinburgh with the same crew and Danny? And what's your next directing, what's your next role as director going to be?
Yes, I just finished, we shot the sequel to Trainspotting, which we called T2, and we shot it from May until July, August. In Edinburgh, and with the original cast and Danny Boyle directing, and some of the original crew even, and it sounds a bit twee, but it was really like coming home. It felt really, really wonderful to be back on Danny's film set. I've missed him a lot, and I've regretted the years we didn't work together, not because of specific films, but just because I love working with him, and I've always felt that he got some of the best work out of me. It was my first film director with Shallow Grave, and he set the bar really high in terms of what that relationship can be like between a director and an actor. And so I was just absolutely delighted to be back on his film set. And to be playing those characters again was somewhat intimidating. It was quite scary to come back to them 20 years later, and I think I'm not alone in feeling that I was worried that I might not be able to get back in his shoes, you know, I might not be able to feel like him again after so long. But of course, sort of, he's me and I'm him, and the sort of the two worlds collide, and in the first scene, it felt really great. Mm-hmm. It was great to be acting with those guys again and girls again, and to be saying John Hodges' words again was great. And it comes out, I think, in January in Britain, and I don't know when here in Spain, but it'll be early next year, I think. It's good.
Hola, buenos días.
Hi. First of all, I want to congratulate you for the film. I love the film, and I wish you the best of luck. I hope you win a prize. A couple of questions. One for you, and I'd like to know whether a Scotsman, a Scottish actor, how did you end up making your first film as a director in an America which is such that back deep America? And the question for Miss Connolly, I would like to ask you, what was it like to work with the great David Bowie, who recently passed away? Thank you very much.
I came to the film as the actor of the Swede, you know, as I've said, I was attached to the film for quite a long time. I've played many Americans, but I've never directed a feature film before, so that was a first, but I don't think our nationalities define us or confine us, if you like, in terms of what we can and can't do. I think you approach anything with open eyes and a hunger about learning about that time. For me, learning about that time and the riots in Newark in 67, I didn't know very much about. Of course, Vietnam I knew a lot about, the post-war American dream I knew a lot about. I live in America, I have done for quite some years, so I am very attuned to Americanism and how I feel about my American friends and what I love about that. So I don't see that I was in a negative place to direct this movie, or a positive one. I mean, I just was luckily the man who did it. So that's that.
David Bowie, I think I was 14 when we started making it, and I was clearly I knew who he was, but I wasn't that hip yet. Like, I wasn't an Uber fan yet. I think I wasn't that sophisticated musically at that point, so, which was a good thing, because I think otherwise I wouldn't have been able to function properly with him. And working with him, he became really a hero of mine, because I was so impressed by his talent and so impressed by the way he was with everyone, the way I saw him, the way he treated me, and the way I saw him treat everyone on the crew. He was clearly such an artist and so pioneering and bold, and he was so kind to everyone. And yeah, he became a huge hero of mine, and so it was very, very sad to hear of his passing.
You said in the film it deals with the 60s in America after the war in Vietnam, but the sorrow of those parents is really a present-day issue. There are many parents in Europe and America that are losing their kids because of a very similar lack of meaning, because of Daesh. I'm not too sure what you see the same similarities as me. Daesh, she's referring to the Islamic fundamentalist terrorist group.
Of course, yes, there's similarities there. The same things are going on today, sadly. Not only just with terrorists and bombs, bombing civilian people, targets, but also with riots, race riots. The same images can be seen in the streets of America today that we portray in our movie back in the 60s. And you would hope that we would learn and move on, but of course it seems that we keep going round and round. So, yeah, but it wasn't ever a sort of an intention and that's honestly the case. It was never, let's make this film now because it's very relevant. It's relevant because it is, not through the filmmaker's choice, you know. It wasn't why we made the film now.
Hi, a question for Mr. McGregor about your experience as a director. Did you expect it to be like that? Because that feeling of responsibility, I imagine, on your shoulders, that makes the work much more yours. So a couple of questions. What has surprised you of the experience to direct? And then as regards to critics, I don't know what relationship you've got as an actor with the critics. And how is it now as a director? How do you feel now with the critics as a director?
Well, the experience of making it was what I hoped it would be. I always dreamed that it would be... I wanted to be involved in a story from the beginning to the end and to be... You know, I think your imagining of a story when you read it as an actor is the same as the imagining of it as a director. There's no difference. I don't read a script and only concentrate on the one character. I have to see the whole thing in my mind, which is like seeing the movie. The nice thing about directing is you can realize it in that way. You know, you can work with your designer and your cinematographer and the costume designer and with all of the creative people and the actors, and you can express how you imagine things and then take on from everybody. Like, the best directors I've worked with sort of stand in the middle of these incredibly talented people and allow them to do really great work, you know. And I hoped I did that, and that's what I certainly felt like to me. Like, I was so satisfied with the interaction. The creative discussions were wonderful, really, really wonderful. But like you say, there's a responsibility of that, and I feel like on the day when Tom, the head of Lakeshore, called me in New York and said that I could direct the movie, put on this backpack full of responsibility, this weight that I carried till the very last day of the sound mix, you know, 16, 17 months later. I carried this weight of something that the responsibility to which I'd never known before. And it's massive. It's what makes it beautiful and brilliant, but it's also what makes it, an incredible responsibility. So that's what makes me feel I couldn't rush into the next thing. I could never go just find a script that somebody wants me to direct. I would have to love the story as much as I love this one. I would have to sort of need to tell the story as much as I needed to tell this one in order to justify that amount of time and effort and thought. I mean, it's like being blinkered for 16 months. It's quite extraordinary. And my relationship with critics is that very early on in my career, I realized that I couldn't, I got too upset to read. I love what I do so much, and I like the idea that other people like it that way too. So when I would read things to the contrary, where you realize that they don't, I found it too hurtful and painful, so I just never read them. I don't read crits. I never did as an actor, and I haven't done so as a director. And I'll just continue it that way. I don't make the film, I don't act it for critical acclaim. I act to try and make people feel things and think things. And so it's easy for me to just not think about it too much. I wish all my friends knew, because I keep getting texts going, "Oh, are you okay?" And, you know, so I can understand they might not have been all great.
Thank you for the film. Great responsibility, as you say.
Oh, you're in English. Yeah. Thank you.
I have a question. The psychiatrist in the film, I have the feeling she has the complete responsibility for what happens. Because from very young, I have the feeling, I don't know if I'm right or not, and was it in the book, it's almost as though she directs the family and the little girl to believe these theories that she has, that the mother is the beauty queen, the father is the hero, and therefore the girl can't be normal. Is that how you felt, and is that how Philip Roth wrote it? Because I have not read, I've read his books and I love him, but I haven't read that one.
Do you want to answer?
I think it certainly presents itself as a viable answer, and the film and the book, she's certainly guilty of certain things in the book. But perhaps they all are, you know? And I think that the book really asks questions, and I think that the film asks questions. I mean, that the Philip Roth ends the book with a series of questions. And so I don't think it really points one figure in any one direction, the novel, and nor do I think the film does. And I think that it's left for all of us to consider, you know, was there something wrong in what, you know, the Swede and Dawn were trying to do? Were they in denial about something? Were they not seeing each other clearly? Were they not able to really absorb each other's point of view? I think the book asks those questions, and the film does too. It talks about how we get one another wrong, how we get each other wrong before we meet each other, and when we're together, and afterwards when we talk about one another, how we aren't necessarily, our interpretations aren't necessarily so reliable. So I think that that's intentionally left a little open-ended.
There's a betrayal, obviously, with her harboring Mary and not telling the Swede. In the novel, there's also a further betrayal in that the Swede has an affair with her. And immediately when his wife goes into the sanitarium, where he's completely facaked and loses his mind. And mm-hmm. But I don't know. I like to think that Roth is exploring everyone's looking for reasons as to why she does what she does. And I think at the end of the day, I believe, he's saying that she does what she does because that's what she did. And it's not because the Swede turned his back on his religion. It's not because he stepped out of his social class and moved to the countryside in white Republican America. It's not because he was a sports star. It's not because Dawn was a beauty queen. She did what she did, but he presents lots of reasons as why that might be the case and allows us to mull it over, as Jennifer says. But I think he's just saying he's not laying blame anywhere. And it's interesting, the Swede is living his life after she leaves, trying to find the reasons why he's to blame, like constantly looking back to, in the novel, to the moment where she asks her daddy to kiss her, and the moment where she witnesses the monk burning. He really has these two strong moments of turmoil that he thinks that's why he's to blame. He wants it to have been his fault somehow.
Question. Costly. A question from Ms. Connolly. You started very early in cinema with Sergio Leone, Once Upon a Time in America, and now you've worked in a film with a very young actress, Dakota Fanning. I would like to know, what type of relationship did you have with her when you were shooting the film? Were your mother like as an advisor, or how was the relationship with Dakota? And Ewan, a question for you. The film, just like the novel, can be accused perhaps of being ambivalent vis-a-vis the 1960s. And I'd like to know what you think about that theory that exists that in the US you've tried to take away the prestige of all of the from all of the movements of the 1960s, Because of the triumph of capitalism, and that is to say, what do you think of that? That's to say, it's trying to take away the prestige of all of those all of that activism in the 1960s, and all through because capitalism has brought about that situation. Complicated question. I'm sorry.
Dakota's a fantastic actress. I loved working with her. She's always been formidable, I think, from when she was quite a young girl. I never feel like I'm in a position where I want to advise people, because I'm always just trying to figure things out myself, I feel. And I'm happy to be in an experience together with the people that I'm working with and to learn from those experiences. She's certainly someone who is very capable and very confident, and seems to be handling, from what I can see, she's a really, strikes me as someone who's very balanced and is transitioning really beautifully from being a kid actor to an adult actor. And her work is certainly extraordinary. So I really enjoyed working with her.
I think if the book is guilty of something, so should the film. The film is an adaptation of the novel. I don't know that it's as black and white as you suggest, in that the film is not suggesting, and nor the novel, I think, that one side is better than the other, or one wins out in the other. I think it's... I'm not sure that I'm even able to look at it that deeply. I don't know. I don't think it's, in our movie, Dakota turns up at the end. We know that she's not a Jane anymore. There's something, she's survived somehow. She's found some other life, and she's very plain and unnoticeable. But she's not been arrested. She's not died, as you might assume that she would have done. So it doesn't suggest that the 60s is dead, if she represents the 60s, that the 60s didn't work or it didn't survive. No, because she's there at the end. And in actual fact, the Swede who represents capitalist hope does not survive. He is a character who's broken. Jennifer's character, Dawn, falls apart, has a breakdown, has an affair, but survives. She's able to somehow live a life in a way that the Swede is not. The Swede's fucked, when his daughter leaves. So I don't think it's as black and white as your question suggests. I don't see it that way. I certainly didn't. I didn't make it with that intention. I loved the pluralism in the book. I loved being able to see from everybody's point of view. I loved siding with Dr. Sheila one minute and then not the next. Because it makes my brain fire, and it makes me think and question, and I hoped that the film would do the same thing. Thanks.
Tenemos tiempo para una.
We have time for one final question. Time for one final question. Hi.
Here.
Oh, hi.
Hi. See, there was a thing I was impressed in the car. The daughter asked the father, "Could you test me the way you test my mother?" And the situation is a little strange. How do you direct her, the kid?
Yeah.
How do you explain to her?
It's a very good question, because it's a absolutely key scene. There's a scene in the movie, for those of you who haven't seen it, where quite early on in the movie, the Swede's daughter, who's 12 or 13 at the time, asks him to kiss her, and he gives her a little kiss like a father would his daughter. And she says, "No, I want you to kiss me like you kiss mummy." And there's a moment of tension in that moment. And it's in the novel, Roth explores it in a more profound way, the sort of taboo of incest, I suppose, that we didn't feel necessary in the movie. But in that moment, that's what's happening in the car, I guess. A recognition of something, that she's stepped over a line. And I have to say, I auditioned that actress, Hannah, who's an amazing actor, like a really, really good actor. I auditioned her with that scene and one other scene, and I could feel that she could play it. And then when it came to shooting the scene, we didn't spend a lot of time talking about it. I didn't over explain to her what I was hoping to create, or because I didn't know what her understanding of it would be. She's only a child, so I didn't want to introduce ideas that she might not have considered, so I didn't. But just what we did with Hannah was what I did with all the actors, as we would clear everyone out the way. We were just alone in the car and we rehearsed it. And as soon as we started playing it, it was clear that she knew exactly, whether she understood or knew, I don't know, but she played what was necessary for that scene amazingly well. And with a sort of maturity that I was surprised at. Yeah. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Thank you to all of you.